Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. This is our View of the Opposition show. As I talk to a supporter that supports Fulham's opposition for the upcoming match, this episode I will once again be talking to Jamie Smith as he joined me back in August to preview the match at Craven Cottage against Burnley. I look forward to speaking to my guest as always, but before I do anything else, I have to welcome him back to the show. Jamie, welcome back to Cottage Talk.
Hi, Russ. How you doing?
I am doing great. Look forward to talking to you about this upcoming match. It's a very nervy situation for Fulham supporters. I'm sure Burnley supporters are feeling some nerves too, but we will talk about both teams in this episode. But let's just start from the beginning. Give me your overall view of Burnley's season so far.
Yeah, obviously it's been a really tough one for us after last season was so good and finishing seventh and qualifying for Europe, and it was a bit of a thrill ride for a lot of last season, some amazing results and some really great times. It's been a bit of a bump back down to earth this season. It's tricky to put our fingers on exactly what's gone wrong, but luckily in the last few weeks we've seen some
Europa
things
League
around.
Factor, Jamie, I'm sorry to break in. Do you think that hurt you?
I think it's an obvious thing to point towards, and I think Dash himself has said that he thinks it probably did have an impact. I think it's a bit cheap, though, to blame the Europa League. We were all desperate to get there at the end of the season when it was still in the balance and we were just trying to get over the line. So to fight for something so hard and then complain that it made it a difficult season, I don't really like doing that. But from my point of view, I think the main impact that it had was that we just didn't really prepare for the season properly. We were still playing a lot of pre-season friendlies around our Europa League qualifiers. Obviously, our first game was in July. Whereas it seemed to me like we needed to have pre-season almost completed by the time we played our first competitive game, so we could have been ready to go straight away. As it was, I think we're a little bit undercooked for the start of the Premier League season. We played a lot of matches, but some were competitive, some weren't. We didn't seem fully prepared to me. And I think probably the disappointment of missing out on the group stage had an impact on our form in the early weeks of the season as well. So a combination of things, really, but certainly the Europa League was a factor.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's talk about the upticks recently for Burnley. Three matches in a row that you've won, two obviously in the league that are very important to what's going on with Burnley this season. So put your finger on why you've had this uptick.
Well, there's been a massive change at the back. Boxing Day, we lost 5-1 at home to Everton, and it felt like that was a real sort of a pivotal moment. There was serious talk. Yeah, there was serious talk for the first time, I think, among supporters that maybe Dyche's future at the club wasn't as secure as everyone thought it was. There was still a lot of people saying that we should keep him until the end of the season. If we go down, we go down. We'll trust him to bring us back up. But there was certainly a growing section of the fans who were starting to think that maybe he wasn't going to be capable of turning it around. Luckily, as we've seen in the last couple of games and then the cup match, the team seems to have found the defensive resilience that sort of characterised our season last time out with keeping clean sheets again, two in the last three games. We conceded one against Huddersfield, we look almost solid. We were conceding a lot of cheap goals. That Everton game, it was 3-0 after 18 minutes, and Everton hadn't had to play that well to do that. Everton, the game before that, had conceded 6 against Spurs. We didn't record a shot until after half an hour in that game. It was really, really diabolical. But sometimes you need to hit the absolute low point to be able to turn it round. Some fans as well have pointed to our first promotion season under Dash. We had a similar defeat over the Christmas period that acted as a real moment that the squad bounced back from. And after that, we went 23 games unbeaten and won the title. Sorry, the second promotion season, not the first one. Got mixed up. So I'm not saying we're going to go the rest of the season unbeaten, but there's a real hope that the Everton defeat really proved to be the nadir in our season, and that now we're going to be on the up.
Okay, so you look at your improvement in defence. Let's talk about the goalkeeper situation. You and I were talking about this off-air. Has that been an effect as well?
It's certainly been an effect. I mean, the Joe Hart situation, I could probably talk about this for the entire show because I've got really strong views on it. I think Dash was in a difficult situation. The Europa League game at Aberdeen, first competitive game of the season, Nick Pope dislocates his shoulder. He's going to be out for probably 5-6 months, and that's how long it's taken to get him back. Tom Heaton, around the same time, had a calf problem. So our two main goalkeepers, who everyone thought were going to battle for the gloves, suddenly both injured. Not clear if they're going to be available for the start of the Premier League season. Heaton's also missed pretty much all of last season, injured as well. So Dash obviously thinks, I need to get another body in. Joe Hart's available. He's settled in the local area. He's been at Man City for a long time, looking to prove himself. Proven quality back in the day. Been England's number one. Won the Golden Glove in the Premier League 3 times, I think. Won Premier League titles. No doubting Joe Hart's record. But the last couple of seasons, his form's fallen off a cliff, really, and he's been really poor. He lost his place at West Ham last season, for example. So I think it was a risk. However, it's fair to say that Hart's been one of our best players this season. This is the sort of... It's a difficult thing to reconcile that we've conceded so many goals, but Joe Hart has done quite well. So my theory is that it's just had a bit of a destabilising impact on the team, having a different character at the back. They're not quite used to how Hart manages his back four. It seems to have... It's been destabilising somehow. I also think there's possibly been a morale issue with the fact that Tom Heaton, he's the club captain, he's a local lad, massively popular with the fans, he's been at the club a long time, he's a local hero, really. The fact that Tom Heaton's not been playing, he's been in the media making it clear that he's not happy that he's not playing, not whinging, but rightly saying that I'm a proven Premier League goalkeeper, I've been in England squads, I want to play, and if I'm not going to play, I want to leave. So I think it's been destabilising that Heaton's not played. He's obviously got allies in the squad. So when Dash made the decision to bring Heaton back for the West Ham game, after the Everton game where we conceded 5, and it was the Everton game where it was the first time Hart had really been to blame. For me, probably 3 of the 5 goals Hart should have done better than it. And you can't be conceding 3 goals because of goalkeeper errors in one match. That's obviously farcical. So he made that call. Hugely popular decision with the fans. West Ham were dreadful that day. We didn't have to play that well to win, but to get the clean sheet after making the change, he suddenly looked a lot more solid at the back. Heaton's organising the defence like we knew he can. The fans love that Heaton's back in goal. It really got the fans back on side. All the fans that were suddenly speculating about Nash not being the right man, they've gone quiet. I was starting to be one of them. I've gone quiet. I love that Heaton's back in the team. So it was a massive call. I think he could and probably should have made it earlier for me, but he's made the decision now and it seems to be working. The team's on a winning run. We're not conceding soft goals anymore. So it's the right thing to have done. However, his problem now is that Nick Pope's also back. So... having made the big call to get rid of Joe Hart and bring back Tom Heaton, he's going
to
make
the same
decision.
I'm sorry, this is a good
decision.
Problem to have, 3 quality goalkeepers. I'm sorry, that's
is
a good
it?
Problem.
Is it? Well, I understand that Fulham have had their problems, but it's not like having 3 good strikers, is it, where the competition's a good thing and you swap them in because you want your goalkeepers to play all season. So having 3 good ones, for me, it's a bad problem because two of them aren't going to be happy. Burnley aren't a massively resourced club. Joe Hart's going to be on quite a large amount of money, even though we didn't pay a big fee for him. So suddenly we've got a lot of resource tied up in players that aren't going to be playing. Joe Hart presumably got some sort of assurances from Dash that he was going to get a crack. Fair play, he's played 15, 16, 17 Premier League games or something like that. So he's had a real run in the side. Nick Pope will rightly say, last season when I came in, after Heaton got injured, I was outstanding, one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League. I went to the World Cup. I need to be the number one as well. So it's really in the balance at the minute. I suspect that Heaton will be in goal for the Fulham game.
Okay.
Whether it's Pope or Hart that's on the bench remains to be seen. And yeah, I think it's certainly an issue that's going to... Dash is going to keep being asked about it this month while the transfer window's open, let's put it that way.
Well, listen, you make a strong point because my first thought is that, well, you know, you have these 3 quality players of, you know, that's a great problem to have. But you
can't play them all, though, can you?
You can't, so. And that's the counter to it, and that's why your argument blows mine out of the way, of course. You're right there, Jamie. I'm glad that you went back to me at that because you make perfect sense. I'm just looking at having, you know, that depth. But when it comes to a goalkeeper, only one can play. So that obviously that can be a problem. You are explaining how that could have been a problem this season for Burnley. All right, let's move on. Let's go back and talk about the match at the beginning of the season. I know it's a very long time ago. We're talking back in August. Fulham are very different now because they have a different manager, and they are in a very difficult situation. So are Burnley. But what did you get out of the first time the teams played? We're talking way back in August.
Yeah, I think the Fulham game was a real example of the defensive problems that we've had for a lot of this season. To concede four, and we all saw Fulham last season how good they were in attack, but to concede four to a newly promoted team, it's not what we expected from a team that finished seventh in the Premier League last season, kept a load of clean sheets, and one of the most solid teams in the league. Talked about the Europa League before, I think it did have an impact that we had a draining trip to Greece a few days before. Dash was rotating the team at that point as well. And rotation's something that it's seen as a something that everyone does in modern football now, but Dash doesn't really do it unless he has to. At this time of year, yeah, when there's a lot of games, he does it a bit more. But last season, and when we've been promoted under Dash, you've known pretty much what the team's going to be every week, unless there's injury suspensions. He doesn't change things unless he's had to. So at the start of the season, when we were seeing totally different defence playing in Europe to the Premier League, I think that was jarring for the supporters and for the team themselves. You don't get that rhythm if you play in a different team every week. So I think that had an impact. The goals that we conceded in that game, I'm sure Fulham fans thought they were very well crafted because you always do when your team scores the goal. But from our point of view, incredibly soft goals that were very, very preventable. But we know Fulham have got that threat, especially in the air with Mitrovic, who I'm sure we'll talk about later in the show. So I think hopefully they've been looking at clips from that game this week around their training sessions, and they'll need to learn the lessons from that match because our defending in that game was as bad, along with the Everton game, as we've been all season, and probably under the 6 years that we've had with Dash and Charlton, we were that bad on that day.
It's funny that you went right to the goals by Fulham, because I think that's going to be something that we're going to talk about when we really get in and preview in this match, because I see that as a potential way Fulham can win this match, is how they played. I'm talking about the goals. They play a different style, but how they set up those goals, they still have the talent to do that. When we talk about breaking down the game, I think that's when we really need to get into it, because I think that's where the game can be won, lost, or there be a draw, is how you defend when Fulham attacks. But we'll get to that in just a bit. Let's now talk about key players for you in this upcoming match for Burnley against Fulham. Who has to play well for you to get all 3 points?
Well, I think the defence needs to keep performing as well as they have done recently. James Tarkowski is going to be quite an interesting one for this game because as one of our best players, he's someone who underperformed really quite badly for a lot of the season so far. But since Tom Heaton came back into the goal, it is surprising because he almost went to the World Cup. He would have had a chance to go if he hadn't had the injury and decided, I think he was on the standby list and then pulled out to have an operation. So he had a real chance to go to the World Cup. And he earned that opportunity because he was outstanding last season, but he hasn't matched those performance levels this season. We've seen in the media over here, I don't know if it's had much play over there, but there was a rumour that Liverpool wanted to sign Tarkowski on loan this month.
Wow.
Liverpool obviously got a lot of defensive problems at the minute. Gomez is injured. Ironically, he got injured at the turf when Liverpool won there a few weeks ago. Lovren's out at the minute as well. Matip's not fit. So they're looking to plug that gap, and there was talk that Tarkowski was going to be the man that wanted to do it. The fact that they wanted him on loan, if this rumour is true, is obviously farcical from our point of view. Why would we let one of our best players go out on loan when we're in a relegation battle? It makes no sense. And Dash laughed it off in his press conference, which he often does. He uses his humour as a distraction technique. We know this is one of the things that Sean Dash does when he speaks to the media. But it will be interesting to see if Tarkowski is affected by that rumour at all, whether it means that he pushes his performance levels up to try and impress Liverpool and maybe earn a permanent move. There's been talk that we want 50 million for him. On performances this season, it's a ludicrous amount of money, the sort of price tag that you put on a player to make everyone aware that he's absolutely not for sale. Or the flip side is that he gets distracted and it plays on his mind that he might get the chance to go somewhere else. We saw a few years ago, Danny Ings was playing really well up front for us and his contract was running out. Liverpool were interested. Everyone knew that Liverpool were interested. And as soon as it sort of became common knowledge that Ings was probably going to sign for Liverpool at the end of the season, his performance levels just disappeared. Whether it was that he didn't want to get injured and he was trying to avoid getting hurt, or he just subconsciously switched off because his future was secured, whatever it was, Ings stopped performing. So the concern for us is that something similar happens to Tarkowski. I don't think that there's anything like as much in this rumour as there was the Danny Ings thing. I think it's probably just paper talk. But it will be interesting to see how Tarkowski reacts this weekend.
I'm glad that you brought that up, and I'm just going to say this. Forget about this match for just a minute. This is just me talking to you, talking to a Burnley supporter. I don't want to see that happen if it was to come to fruition, because I want to see Burnley keep their best players. I want to see the teams that are, you know, mid-table to in the relegation zone keep their key players and not just give them away to the big six. I don't want to see that. So I just want to say I hope that it's just a rumor. It doesn't go beyond that, and that Sean Dyche and Burnley should do everything that they can to hold on to the player. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah,
that's just
my strong
view on that.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously, it's happened to us before. Michael Keane is a very good example. He was, at that time, we got relegated the season that Keane left, and he was too good for the Championship, so it made sense for him to move on. But he maybe didn't choose the right club. Everton have been a bit of a shambles for the last 2 or 3 years. He's gone from being one of the brightest young defenders in England to someone whose form seems really good one week and then disastrous the next, and he's not really in the England setup anymore. And Tarkowski's one of the players who's sort of jumps above him. So it goes to show that if you do move, you have to pick the right move.
Oh, totally.
But I think Leicester are a really good example of this, that obviously they've got a lot more money than us and they've won the title, which obviously helps. But they've been able to keep Mahrez aside. They've kept all their good players, really. They've managed to keep Jamie Vardy, even though Arsenal wanted to buy him. Kept Harry Maguire, even though it was sort of Manchester United wanted to buy him. So they've been determined to keep those players and keep the group together. So I think the lesson is that if you want to be a club that can build, you have to make sure that you keep these players. And sometimes you just have to reject the big boys.
Totally agree, Jamie. And it's something that Fulham have been fairly good about. They've rejected most moves like this from bigger sides. You know, I can't tell you how many teams have been after Ryan Sessegnon.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you know, again, it's so funny to talk about this now, Ross McCormack, and you could talk about the situation with him. But I can't tell you how many teams were after him because of all the goals that he had scored. And Fulham stayed true to themselves and did not buckle under the pressure. There was also Moussa Dembele, the younger Moussa Dembele. Same situation that they waited, and they decided not to sell him at the last minute, even though Tottenham wanted him badly, because Fulham wanted reportedly a loan back, and Tottenham just wanted to buy him outright, and it never happened. And thankfully, they were able to keep McCormack and Dembele for that Championship season when Fulham were close to relegation to League One. Those two guys, keeping those players. That's why these decisions make no sense to me. Why would Burnley do that? And that's why I wanted just to say that for a few minutes, my friend. Let's move on. Let's now get into learning a little bit more about Burnley. We did this last time, so we're going to do it again. I want to go to you with strengths and weaknesses. I go to whoscored.com. I share them with you. And then you just tell me if they match up. I'll also give you style of play when I give you the strengths. This is what whoscored.com currently says about your team, Burnley. Strengths: aerial duels and protecting the lead. It says style of play: attack through the middle, long balls, attempt crosses often, and aggressive. Does that describe strengths and style of play of Burnley? And if there's anything else you want to add, please do, Jamie.
Yeah, I think I broadly agree with that. Obviously, there's a little bit of a conflict maybe with plays long balls through the middle and then puts a lot of crosses in, because that's two totally different things. But sure. Yeah, I think we are a direct team. There's not really any point in trying to pretend that we're not. We'll almost certainly play two big strikers up front on Saturday. It'll probably be Barnes and Wood, seems to be the preferred pairing. There's a chance that Barnes might play out wide, actually, because we've got problems with injuries and suspensions with the wingers at the minute. So it could even be a case that we've got two big strikers and then Ashley Barnes on the wing. Wow. So I think you'll certainly see us look to try and use that aerial power in attack. But in terms of crossing, I think one of the players that Fulham are going to have to keep an eye on is Dwight McNeil. He's really emerged over the last couple of games. The same game that Dash made the decision to bring Keaton back for Hart, Dwight McNeil's in the team as well. Teenage winger. And he's made a fantastic impact over the last couple of games.
Okay.
I think he's a really bright talent, and he gives us something really different to what people expect from Burnley. You expect Burnley to be big and strong and physical and direct and all the things that we talked about from being on Who Scored Men. Anyone who watches us knows that tends to be the case. But in McNeil, we've suddenly got a player who's very technical, very comfortable on the ball. He's got pace, which is something lacking in our team. So it gives us a real X factor. And I don't want to get carried away with this lad, but I think he's probably going to win about 100 England caps and probably three or four Ballons d'Or. So, yeah, pretty excited about him, really.
Okay, very good there. Jamie, all right, let's now go to weaknesses, according to WhoScored.com. I'll start here with just weak, and then we'll end with very weak. This is what they say is weak: keeping possession of the ball, avoiding offside, stopping opponents from creating chances, defending against through ball attacks, defending set pieces. They say very weak: defending against attacks down the wings and defending against long shots. Okay. Does that describe the weaknesses of Burnley to you?
Well, there's a lot there, isn't there? So,
yeah.
I think certainly early in the season, I think a lot of that was true. Long shots is an interesting one to start with, because last season, when people tried to explain Burnley's success using statistics, it didn't really work, because we deliberately allowed a lot of shots. That's part of our game. Sure. Our whole plan was that we had the low block and then midfielders sat really close to the defence, so there wasn't any space around the Burnley box. We were happy to defend crosses last season because we were good at it. So we gave teams two choices. You can go round the wing and put crosses in, which we'll defend, or you can take long shots. And we defended them both very well last season. What we've seen this year is that we haven't really done that. Whether it's a case of the personnel being different with the goalkeeper change, or the fact that the team hasn't been pressing as hard, so there's been more space. Whatever it is, long shots and crosses have suddenly been a lot more effective against us. What were some of the other ones? I've forgotten. There were so many.
Not a problem there, Jamie. There were a decent amount of them, but, you know, it's funny because I'm not reading the Fulham ones, but I'm just telling you that there are a decent amount of Fulham too. But I'll go back and I'll look at the weaknesses for you. It said, like we talked about, keeping possession of the ball, avoiding offside, stopping opponents from creating chances, defending against through ball attacks, defending set pieces, and defending against attacks down the wings and defending against long shots. Those were the very weak.
Yeah. So the set pieces, similarly, it seems to have been a problem with the way that we've been set up. But
okay.
The last couple of games with Heaton organising the defence again, that seems to have been a big change. Keeping possession, that has always been a bit of a problem for us in the Premier League. We always seem happier when we don't have the ball. We don't really have players to unpick the opposition defences. So we've seen a lot of games at Turf Moor this season where teams have worked it out a little bit and they know that they can let us have the ball and we can keep it, but we're not really going to do anything with it. And then they can hit us on the break and we're wide open. So we've gone from last season, we were doing that to teams even at home, yep. and now teams have realised that they can do it to us. So I think that's still probably going to be an issue. It'll be interesting to see what Fulham do, because they're obviously a team that like to be on the ball. And I think that will probably suit us, because we'll be quite happy to let Fulham have it. And the player that we really miss when it comes to possession is Stephen Defoe. He's probably going to be out again at the weekend. I don't think there's been any yep. positive update on him for a while. Last season, the first half of the season, when we were going really well, Defoe was our best player. He's probably one of the best players we've ever had, really.
He's a player Fulham wanted years ago, so I understand yeah. that. I remember Fulham were after him 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, he's injury prone, and that's the only reason why we've been able to sign him. If he was fit all season and able to play 30, 40 games, then he'd be at the top club, I think. But okay. the fact that you can't rely on him, and he might play 6 games in a row and then be out for 2 months, or he might get back to full fitness and then get another injury and be out for a month. So you can never rely on being able to pick him. When he's fit, it's a bonus now. But it's a problem when he's our best midfielder. So you can't expect that he's going to be available. It does mean that there's more pressure on players like Jack Cook and Ashley Westwood, who then have to sort of step up and fill that creativity gap. Westwood, by the way, has been outstanding the last couple of games, so he's another really key player to watch. I've not always been his biggest fan, but he's really taken on more responsibility in the last couple of weeks.
Okay, excellent, Jamie. I do have to mention this, because I did give you all the Burnley weaknesses, and there were 7 of them. There were 7 for Fulham too. And by the way, they don't list any strengths. So there you go on that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no strengths.
None, good. No strengths. None. So that makes me feel real good. Anyway, let's move on. Let me get just your thoughts on Fulham. And then I'm going to share something, because you talked about how you remember Fulham playing. They play differently now. But give me your just overall impression on Fulham.
Yeah, I've always quite liked Fulham. I don't know why. Maybe just games when I was younger left a positive impression on me. I'm not sure. And I really like Claudio Ranieri. Obviously, he's very charismatic. He obviously captured the world's imagination when Leicester won the title. He always had a soundbite. I'm a journalist, so he's brilliant for us because he gives fantastic quotes. That's an extra bonus. He's a dream to write
about.
Full of absolutely fantastic witticisms, and some of the things he says, you're just like, what are you on about? So I really like Claudio Ranieri. And I think it's good to see, no disrespect intended at all, but smaller clubs in the Premier League. There's a lot of people who would say Leeds United should be in the Premier League, Sheffield Wednesday should be in the Premier League, Nottingham Forest should be in the Premier League. Well, if those clubs had been run properly, then they'd be in the Premier League. You can't just run the Premier League on attendances, and that seems to be what people want to do. If you've got 30,000 people coming to your stadium, they think it automatically means you should be in the Premier League. That's not how it works. That's not how a league system works. Right. Burnley are in the Premier League because we deserve to be in the Premier League. We earned that place. Exactly. Just because we're a small town and we don't have a lot of money doesn't mean that we shouldn't be able to do that. Obviously, Fulham have got money, but it's the same sort of thing. It's
it totally is, Jamie.
Huge number of clubs that you're competing with in London. You're talking about a Saturday afternoon, things to do in London, as well as go to watch Fulham. There's millions of things that you could do instead. So I think there are some similarities between Burnley and Fulham. And Craven Cottage, obviously, has been a lot of work, a lot of redevelopment there. But like the Turf, it's a very characterful stadium and one of the best places to watch football in the country, I think.
Right, and there's nothing wrong with being a smaller club, and we're both small clubs, and I'm not afraid to say that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's what makes football more interesting. If it was just playing each other all the time, where's the fun in that? The whole point is games like a couple of seasons ago when we beat Man City 1-0 when they were champions. That's games that make the Premier League so exciting. It's games like that where the little boys with no money upset the billionaires. Right. That's why people say the Premier League is the best league in the world. So
when people talk about memories that will always stay with you, Jamie.
Exactly. So when people talk about, Burnley shouldn't be in the Premier League, you just want to say, well, we're part of what makes the Premier League great.
Totally agree. That's a really good point. Before we talk about your thoughts on key players for Fulham, I want to go back and talk about the situation with Fulham. You mentioned Ranieri, and I want to talk about how Fulham have changed a little bit, just so you understand. Fulham are now counterattacking. Think of Ranieri with Leicester City. And we're not Leicester City, so let's just get that straight. It's not just like it was under Leicester City because we don't have a Jamie Vardy. Let's just put it there. But sure. He is setting us up in a counter-attacking style. So Fulham do not have the possession that they normally had under Jokanovic. So things are different now. So keep that in mind when you project forward going into this match. They're going to look at this differently than they did the first time they played because they're playing differently. They also recently went to using three center backs. So, you know, again, it could be, say, like a 3-4-3, you know, a variation of that, five at the back, obviously at certain points. It could be more like five at the back against Burnley. But Fulham do play differently now. And so that's what makes this a little bit different for, say, Sean Dyche and Burnley, is that he has to look at it a little bit differently because we're not going to be looking to possess the ball like we did the first time we played. So I just want to share that with you.
Sure. I don't think I've seen Fulham play since Ranieri took charge, actually. So that's something that I wasn't really aware of. I didn't realize it'd been that big a change. Obviously, I've seen you talking about the lack of clean sheets, and he was obviously desperate to get desperate to sort out the defensive situation. When you come into a club that's struggling and been conceding a lot and results have been bad, that's obviously the first thing that you do. Back when Dash took charge at Turf Moor, the thing
you have to get the foundation.
Exactly the same thing.
You can't
win football matches unless you keep clean sheets, really. Right. So he's absolutely right to do that.
Right.
It does make me wonder what we're in store for.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring this up, Jamie, because I'm not exactly sure how this is all going to play out, because the way Fulham are set up now is that they want to beat you on the counter. And I think Burnley wants to beat Fulham on the counter. So how is this going to play out? The one thing that I will tell you is that in the last couple matches, we have seen more pressing from Fulham. The second half against Huddersfield Town, they finally started to press Huddersfield Town and cause problems for Huddersfield Town. That's probably how they ended up winning the match. We actually saw that against Arsenal. Even though the scoreline says 4-1, that was flattering to Arsenal because Fulham gave a lot of problems to Arsenal. But it also sets up this match coming up, because I'm not exactly sure how both sides are going to play this, because Fulham are not the same team you saw at Craven Cottage. They still have the same players, but they're playing it differently. So it's fascinating to see how Ranieri's going to set his team up and what is his strategy going to be. Because I would think that he would stick with what has been working lately. So this could be just who blinks first, Jamie.
It could be. It is a tough one to call because the onus is normally on the home team to do the attacking.
Right.
Normally, you would say that we would do that, but in this game, obviously, Fulham probably need the points more than us. It's obviously a massive game for us, and the sort of game that you'd look at and think, if we're going to stay up, is the sort of we really need to win. But we're not in the bottom three right now. It might only be a couple of points, but we're not in the bottom three. If it was a draw, that wouldn't be a disaster for us. Sure. Whereas,
now, this is a massive match for Fulham. You're 100% right about that.
Sure. So I think Burnley will be on the front foot and will probably try and make a fast start. It's something that we've not succeeded in doing a lot this season, to be honest. We've found ourselves down 2-0 early in way too many games. And Dash's response to that is often to try and just lock it down and make sure that we're in the game for a lot longer. But I'm not sure that's the right way to go. I think even though Fulham have been better defensively, I think we still have to look at it as a team that's conceded a lot of goals this season. We have to believe that we can get at that defence and really cause them problems.
Right. That's what makes this very interesting, Jamie, because this, for me, is really a chess match of how both of these managers are going to approach this, because you make some very good points. Fulham need the match. You would think that they would come in with the attitude that they need to come at Burnley, but I don't know if that's going to be the approach. I think it'll be a little bit differently. Well, it's going to be very different than what you saw the first time. I think that Fulham want to counter quickly, but like I've said, they have shown the ability lately to press and to be more aggressive going after the team when they had the ball. And maybe that's going to be the approach from Fulham. But I don't know, you know, again, this could be how both managers look at this, how they want to approach it, and how the players approach it. It could be a very boring match, Jamie. I really don't know. I'm being honest. I really don't know. Or, you know, who knows? Maybe Fulham decide they need it so badly that they just come out and they go after Burnley. But that just hasn't been the approach under Ranieri. So that's what, you know, it's playing mind games with myself, because I'm just not sure what to expect from both teams. But let me ask you, just even with me sharing all that information to you, what player or players concern you for Fulham from a Burnley perspective?
Well, I think having seen the game earlier in the season, I think Mitrovic is obviously a player that Burnley have to be really aware of. He's obviously very, very strong in the air. The sort of striker that traditionally Burnley have always defended well against, because our defenders are very good in the air as well. So that he caused us so many problems at the Costage early in the season was a real concern for me, and a real sort of red flag that it was going to be a tough season, because we just didn't cope. Yeah. He could have had 4 or 5 that game. Fulham could have had 6 or 7. 4-2 was really flattering to us. So Mitrovic, if we defend how we have in the last couple of games, then hopefully we'll handle him a lot better. He is also very combustible. We've seen that throughout his career. He's got a very, he's got a temper that he sometimes struggles to control. This season, he seems to have kept it under.
I was going to say he's kept it in check his time at Fulham, believe it or not.
Yeah, but I think Tarkowski's the sort of defender who he certainly doesn't mind mixing it with strikers. We've seen, sure. I think, the Brighton game last season, Glenn Murray had a lot of tangles with him, so that could certainly be untouched. The other player that I'm really worried about because of sheer pace, and we don't defend pace at all, is Sessegnon.
Yeah. I think he's a key for Fulham. I agree with you.
Yeah, I think everyone expects Sessegnon to go on and have a wonderful future and play for top clubs, play in the Champions League, play for England. So I think it's only a matter of time until he hits those levels. Obviously, he's young and inconsistent. He's going to be a problem. So we just have to hope he has a bad game, really, because we don't have a lot of pace at the back. So as much as we'll normally defend quite deep, we have a deep defensive line to cover that lack of pace. If you get Sessegnon in behind, we just don't be able to catch him.
Okay. And I'm glad that you've singled him out, because I think he's going to be a huge part of Fulham tomorrow. I think he's going to be important along with Mitro. But, you know, talking about pace, because, again, if going back to the Arsenal match, Ryan Sessegnon had 2 chances to score in the first half. If he scores on one of them, then the match is completely different against Arsenal. I know that's crazy to say, but the way you were talking about it, Jamie, bright future, but he's still young and he's inconsistent. I think in a few seasons, those opportunities to say against Arsenal will be goals. It's just he just needs that maturity of playing at the top level. And
he reminds me a lot of Raheem Sterling. He looked at Sterling a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
he had everything.
Look at him now.
Yeah, he had everything in his locker, but he couldn't finish, and his decision making was bad. So he'd get into really good positions, but then he'd almost become paralysed with not knowing whether to shoot or cross or pass. And often he'd just do a combination of none that just didn't really work. And if he got a clear-cut chance, he didn't have the instinct. Whereas now, Pep Guardiola's coached him to a level where he finishes brilliantly, he does the unexpected, he makes good decisions. So I think Sterling's the sort of player that Sessegnon can really look at and go, if I want to become the sort of total package, this is what I need to do.
Yeah. What's good about him is that he has an incredible mind for the game, and his decision-making is actually really good. It's just his finishing at this point isn't the greatest, and that hopefully will come in time. All right, my friend, we got to wrap this up. Let's get to predictions. Before I get your prediction for the match, I'm going to ask you this two ways, how each team can win this match. Let's start with Burnley. How do they win this match?
I think we have to play like we have for the last couple of games and treat it as a chance to keep this winning run going. Confidence should be high. We've got some momentum behind us now. Injury's probably going to be a problem. It looks like we're going to have a problem on the wing. We've only really got one fit winger, McNeil, I was talking about. So we have one winger and he's an 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid is obviously a worry. And it's not clear he's going to play right back either. So a couple of problems with the team selection. But I think we'll try and be on the front foot, make a positive start. The way Fulham win the game is probably the same way they won the game in August. So as much as we talked about Fulham's style changing, I'm sure Ranieri is fully aware of how you exploited our weaknesses
early
in the season. So it would probably be wise to follow a similar blueprint to that, really.
It's funny because I went back and I watched the highlights of that match and, you know, and looked at what the weaknesses are, and they kind of match up to Burnley, you know, what how we played in that match to what's been going on with Burnley. So I do agree with what you're saying. It's just I'm just not sure of what team to expect at Turf Moor from Fulham. I would like to believe it would be a on the front foot approach, but that just hasn't been Ranieri. You know, he wants them to be aggressive, but in the counter, and he wants them probably to be aggressive when you have the ball to cause turnovers. But I don't know if he's going to say to his team, you know what, we got to take the ball. We got to possess the ball. We got to take it to him. I just haven't seen that. So we shall
see. What I would say on this is I think when you're around the bottom of the table, I think managers are so important, and having a really good manager can make the difference. I think Ranieri is a fantastic appointment.
If anyone
can get you out of that mess, he can. And what will play a key role, not just in Saturday, but in the rest of the season, is changes mid-game. Ranieri's obviously got a reputation as the tinker man, in the commas, from when he was at Chelsea and changed the team all the time. But he will make changes during the game.
Yeah.
But we won't. So if you make a change that we don't really react to, that could be a way for Fulham to win the game.
Because we're very set in.
Okay. We start the game playing a certain way, and it's very, very unusual for us to change.
Okay. That's interesting.
Make a radical change to personnel or tactics or system or anything. We tend to start and finish games in basically the same way. So any opposition manager that sees how a game is going and is good enough and has the right players to change the system or tweak the tactics has a real advantage over us, because for all Daesh's good things, one of his faults is that he doesn't seem capable of changing games.
Okay, and what I would call him, and this is with a different sport and a different team that follow, you know, we call teams that you just described, do what we do. They basically do what we do, right? You know, they don't really change things. This is who they are, and this is how they play. So, and like you mentioned, with Ranieri, he's certainly not afraid to tinker. He's done that. He's changed things at halftime. He's changed things a little bit beyond that. So he's not afraid, if things aren't working, to make the changes. So that's very interesting that you say that, Jamie. All right, let's not waste any more time. Let's go to predictions. First, your prediction.
Well, I'm terrible at predictions, to be honest. I've been looking at previous meetings.
Don't worry about that. So
there's been loads and loads of goals, haven't there? Obviously, loads of goals over the season. The last time we were in the same league, loads of goals in both games. I don't think that's probably going to be the case this time. I think you're right. Ranieri will probably set up, try and keep it tight. We're going to want to keep another clean sheet if we can. So I wouldn't rule ICB being 0-0, to be honest. But I'm reasonably confident about our chances, I've got to be honest. I think the momentum's with us right now.
Sure.
We seem more solid at the back. So if it was 1-0, I think that would not be a huge shock.
Okay, very good. I'm going to read the results of a poll I did earlier. I did this late, so I usually get a lot more votes. But I've had 127 votes on the Clutter Talk Twitter page. What is your prediction for Fulham against Burnley? So this isn't like a huge amount, but it's, you know, it's still a decent amount of votes. Win was at 41%. Loss was at 39%, so it's pretty close there. And draw was at 20%. And there are also comments on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Just don't have time to read them, but they're pretty split. They're split in all three different results there. It could go either way. So Fulham supporters are very nervous about this match. As we talked about, Jamie, Fulham need to win this match. Now, after the Oldham embarrassment, and that's what I'm going to call it, was a complete and utter embarrassment. When you talked about the Everton match, it reminded me of that. Now, obviously, this is an FA Cup match. Fulham did not play all of their starters to begin the match. They gave some fringe players a chance, but they were embarrassed at Craven Cottage as they lost to Oldham. It was extremely embarrassing. So there are two ways to look at that. You could say, oh, that's going to be a trend, or that can actually be the bottom, the utter bottom. Well, I'm a glass half full guy, Jamie, so I'm going to say that this is the bottom because I've seen before that glimpses of what Fulham can be. I saw that against Arsenal. I saw in the second half against Huddersfield Town. It hasn't been horrible under Ranieri. I could see it coming together. It just hasn't clicked yet. And after the Oldham match, I'm going to be honest with you, I got upset because of how people were reacting to it. So I made a bold prediction. I'm not going back on my bold prediction, Jamie. I'm not. I'm going to stick with this. I said about a week ago, Fulham would win 3-1 at Turf War. So I'm sticking with it. Do I feel confident at this point? I wouldn't use the word confident, but I'm going to stick with my prediction. I'll say it that because Fulham need the match. They need all three points. So that's kind of where I'm going on it. I was getting, you know, let's just say disappointed with some of the comments after the Oldham match, and I just threw this out there, and I have to own it, Jamie. So I'm going to stick with 3-1, but understand where it's coming from. But I'm gonna stick with 3-1 to Fulham, and we'll see what happens. And that also goes with some of the weaknesses you were talking about, going back and watching the first time the teams played. I know that they're different. How Fulham are playing, the players are still the same. They still have the talent to score those types of goals. So, you know, and really get Mitrovic involved. And I think he is a huge key in this match, but we shall see. Jamie, listen, we got to wrap this up. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
No worries, mate. It's always a pleasure.
All right, great. Please tell everyone how they can follow you on Twitter if they want to follow you.
Yeah, well, if you've not had enough of me over the last half an hour or whatever it's been, you can follow me on Twitter as well. I'm sure we'll be doing some tweets about the game over the weekend. You can get me at Jamie Smith Sport on Twitter.
All right. Well, listen, Jamie, it's been a pleasure talking to you, but we do have to wrap this up. For my guest, Jamie Smith, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.